But what's engaging about this film, and I'm glad that I confronted all this and really let it in, but what's engaging is that, as I wrote here, that it tells the story of an awakening. And in so doing, invites us, the audience, to, you know, follow suit. So I think it's by Andy Sundberg's decision, Andy Sundberg and her co-director, I just blanked on the other woman's name, I'm sorry.
Ricky Stern, sorry.
By focusing on that, on your journey, which is kind of a journey of awakening, it makes it a good way into the story, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
From a dramatic standpoint, I think it's much more engaging than I expected it would be.
And I've talked to a lot of other people that say, you know, you're not just watching me take a journey too, you are journeying with me. And I've even had a few people say, you know, if you were to just tell me the story without taking me on the journey, I probably would have been disinterested and not wanted to go there because it's scary. But since it's kind of like, you know, I'm holding their hand throughout it, that people seem to be more engaged and more comfortable going down that road.
Is this a shape or a strategy that emerged bit by bit as Andy and Ricky were making the film? Did they set out and say, let's do it this way at the beginning? How did you guys...
I actually don't know that. You'd have to ask them about that. I think it was something that kind of just, you know, came into play as we were moving along. And because I met them very early on the way back, and then throughout it, they were like, oh, it's interesting how you changed, you know, throughout Sudan, and then how you continue to change as you were here. So I think it was something that developed, but I'm not really sure whether they had bad intentions from the beginning or not.
How much time did Annie and Ricky spend with you in Darfur themselves?
None.
I thought they went over there a little bit just to kind of feel it themselves.
No.
Okay.
No, they haven't.
Why not?
We did two shoots in Africa. We did a shoot in Chad,
right,
where my sister and I went back with a cameraman and a sound guy, and then we did a shoot in, my sister's also one of the producers, and then did a shoot in Rwanda,
right,
with my sister, one of the other producers, Jane Wells, and a cameraman there.
I really like that you added the Rwanda thing, because that was about the healing part. How does healing happen in a culture that's been devastated by such horrors? And that was a very touching part of your film.
Yes, yeah, I thought it was very necessary to have a part, you know, connecting it to past genocides.
Well, I'm just kind of wondering, I guess I could ask Andy this, but if I were the director, if I were actually going to shape it together, I would want to taste it. I'd want to be there. I'd want to immerse myself in the god-awful psychodrama that is Darfur right now, and just... because it would be part of the creative process of getting in touch with what it all means.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that first of all, it's very difficult to travel. We wouldn't have been able to...
Why not?
...be open about shooting a documentary about what was going on.
But George Clooney and Don Cheadle and guys like that have been over there. I mean, they take camera crews with them, haven't they?
Well, George Clooney attempted to get into Darfur and could not get into Darfur because of the security concerns. He tried to approach from the south and then approached from the west through Chad, and got, you know, up to the border both times and spent a lot of time in the refugee camps in Chad. But he actually wasn't able to get in. Don Cheadle has snuck across the border before with John Prendergast, and so has a number of other people. But that would tell one side of the story and not the full story of, you know, everything that's going on. And even then, it's very difficult to travel around. You're relying upon these rebels to protect you.
Yep.
And you wouldn't be able to get in the action and see the things that I was able to bring back in the photographs.
Okay. All right. As we speak, right now, as you and I are speaking, how would you characterize the levels of warfare and hostility and killing right now? What's going on?
It's switched a little bit from, you know, what was in the movie 2004, 2005, and 2006, and to what we're seeing now. We're calling it phase two of the Sudanese government's operations, and what they're doing now, since they've successfully destroyed 90% of the villages in Darfur. What they're doing now is they're concentrating on denying the food aid and the aid personnel from reaching the 3 million displaced persons. So right now there are a million people that are displaced from their homes that cannot receive food aid, medical support, water, food, any type of support from these NGOs. They're doing it by denying them access to certain areas, restricting their travel permits, and also having the Arab militias, Janjaweed, attack them on the road, killing aid workers, robbing them, raping the women. And so they're specifically now targeting the aid groups to try to starve these individuals out that are in these displaced camps.
Our idea is it's just as cold and bloodless, which is basically to exterminate an entire culture in a portion of their country. And they're trying to do it by starving them and denying them medical aid, and just basically they can get rid of them that way.
Yep.
Okay. Now,
estimates now are between 10 to 15,000 a month dying. Those dying of humanitarian reasons, mainly humanitarian reasons. There still is some fighting going on. Sudanese government was doing bombing raids in north and west Darfur last week. So there still is some bombing of civilian villages and attacks on civilian villages going on, as there was before, but not on the same large scale, because people say, well, the violence is subsiding. The only reason the violence is subsiding is because they can't find any villages to attack anymore, because right, they've already destroyed all of them.
Now, the what one understands from a cursory reading in newspapers and books is basically the, I'm going to try and break it down into very simplistic cowboy and Indians movie terms, but they're the bad guys. Very simple. The bad guys are the Sudanese honchos in cartoon, and the evil, I mean, what other word is there for these guys? Evil militia, who are known as the Janjaweed, whom the government supports through materials and money. Is that, that's right, correct? Right?
Yes, that's correct, and that's where we took the title for the documentary and for the book, The Devil Came on Horseback, is from the literal translation of Janjaweed, which means a devil on a horse.
Okay. Now the people that are suffering, obviously, in this one are the Darfur region agrarian farmers, and here's the tricky part: some of whom have given support to the fighters for the Sudan Liberation Movement and the Justice and Equality Movement. Isn't that right?
Yes, that's true. And there, I mean, that is, like you said, in simplistic terms, what the root of the issue is that the Khartoum government does not develop the African areas. Now, when I say African, I mean the black Africans, not the Arab Africans, because they are all Africans, because Sudan falls on the African continent,
right,
you know, by definition.
Mm-hmm.
So they want equal development. These rebel groups formed and attacked back the government because they couldn't get anywhere except for by force. The government then retaliated and is trying to wipe out any tribe that may possibly support these rebel movements. And it's a policy of drain the pond to catch the fish. So if there's a village that is a Zagawa village or a Fur village, which will possibly support the rebel groups or where rebels may possibly have come from, they'll destroy it and destroy all the people. Then they arm and train these evil militias known as the Janjaweed,
yep,
which is the equivalency of training and arming the Ku Klux Klan during the Civil Rights Movement.
Got it.
And giving them free rein.
Now, the Sudan Liberation Movement, are they all liberation movements are about economic inequality and, you know, a ruling class or a money class giving almost nothing to an impoverished class. But are they Marxist or Leninist in their orientation, or are they just basically trying to be about economic fairness and redistributing of wealth and whatnot?
They just want equal rights. They want to own land. They want to be able to be officers in the military. They want to be able to own a business, to have education for their kids, possibility of electricity and water and paved roads. And I mean, they just want equal development. They want to be the equal citizens of the country of Sudan. That's simply what they want.
Right.
Now, the it's been a little bit more complicated than just the SLM and the JEM at this point in time, because after the signing of a peace treaty between a fraction of the SLM, they fractured into many different groups, and right now there are 15 or so various rebel movements within Darfur, all of which are fighting for the same thing, but but they disagree on different ways to do it. So sometimes there's even inner fighting right now between these different rebel groups.
Okay. I was reading in a couple of articles that said that this the conflict was exacerbated. It is believed in some quarters by global warming because it cut down that there's been less rain in the Darfur region and there's been more deprivation as a result. Is there anything to that in your view?
Well, I think that people are trying to jump on the global warming bandwagon and try to blame a genocidal campaign by a government on global warming, which to me doesn't make sense. There can be global warming, but the aquifers in Darfur are 200 feet under the surface, and if the government wanted to try to alleviate some of that by setting up irrigation plants and by setting up cisterns to catch what little rainwater they have and drilling wells for the population instead of killing them all, that would definitely be a good thing. But I think that it is a motivating factor for some of the Arab militias to become involved because they want more land that's more fertile than you know, further in the north. So that's probably a motivating factor for some of the people, but ultimately it's a government policy of trying to destroy their people because they don't believe them to be equal.
How do you regard the belief in some quarters that, as unlikely as it may sound, that director Steven Spielberg is in a position to really affect this situation because he's in a position to profoundly influence the thinking of the Chinese because he's been engaged to work as a kind of a creative organizer of the 2008 Beijing Olympic Games, and he could make it embarrassing for the Chinese if they were to continue to support the Sudanese president Omar Hassan al-Bashir and his cabinet stooges, and they could bring pressure upon the guy to do something. What do you think about
that? Well, I had a 5-hour meeting with Stephen, along with a number of other advisors, people like John Prendergast and Don Cheadle. We had George Clooney on the phone.
When was that?
At the Powers. A number of people, we sat down with Stephen and talked to him about this.
When was that meeting?
When was that? Last month? Month before?
Okay.
It was about a month ago, I would say.
Right.
And he was basically seeking further information about what was going on the ground and also trying to figure out where he could best put his efforts to try to influence the situation using the Olympics as a way. And he said, if you tell me that the best thing to do is to... are you still there?
Yes, I'm right here.
Okay. He said if you tell me the best thing to do is to pull out of the Olympics right now, then I will do it. Because I think that it is more important to try to stop a genocide than to be a creative producer for the opening and closing ceremonies of the Olympics. And we said no. He has a long-standing relationship with the Chinese government ever since he filmed Empire of the Sun in China. And he goes back 4 times a year and deals with the Chinese government, whenever he is there.
Yeah.
So he has a tremendous amount of influence, probably more than anyone else in the United States. To be able to influence them. And we advised him that this needs to be done in a very creative way. And if you threaten the Chinese with, hey, I'm going to pull out of this if you don't do something, they're going to say, okay, fine, pull out. They're not one status symbol, and celebrity status in China doesn't have the same meaning as it does here in the United States. So they're not going to really honor that. So what he needs to do is to engage himself creatively with these Chinese government individuals and say, we are very concerned with the United States. I am very concerned with this. I'm going to continue to work with you. If we don't see any type of positive movement towards changing the situation in Darfur through your influence over the Sudanese government, then I may be willing to pull out at a later date, put it out on the table, but don't threaten it to them.
Yeah.
So that's what he's done. And in addition to that, I'm in New York right now, but I actually live out in Santa Monica.
Uh-huh.
There's a councilman tomorrow that is proposing that all of the companies that are sponsors of the Olympics that are based here in New York City, such as Johnson & Johnson, GE, Coca-Cola,
yeah,
that they, again, engage responsibly with the Chinese government to get them to influence the Sudanese government. And if not, there's a possibility that these companies will be, that they may pull their support from the Olympics,
okay,
if the Chinese government doesn't do something. So these are the creative ways that we can engage China, and they are effective. They have been effective in the past.
Okay, I understand. Okay. So I'm glad that the film is going to be constantly playing in various cities between now and at least the mid-fall. And are you going to be touring with the film and giving interviews locally when it opens in various cities? They're not doing a big break, as I understand it. They're doing it, you know, city by city, right? Territory by territory?
Yes, we're trying to do that. In addition to, you know, traveling out the film, I'm trying to travel out my book, which came out in March, you know, because the film is very effective in reaching people,
yeah.
And the book is very effective in reaching people, and it tells the full story. So we try to go together with them, and we're talking about a possible university tour in the fall or early spring next year, and it'll be on Netflix on November 1st, so everybody will be able to get out and see it, and I think that everybody should. It's a very effective tool that informs them and hopefully empowers them to go make a difference.
Right. Of all the Democratic presidential candidates, the only person who's in your film is Barack Obama. Has there been any others who have been particularly impassioned about in their what they've said about the Darfur situation?
Sure. I mean, Obama's the big advocate of it. He spoke at the rally. That's why we had them in there. Biden is very outspoken about the issue and is one of the only candidates that has proposed that the U.S. military even get involved to stop this genocide because it's so horrendous and it's still going on. Edwards is interested in it. His wife came and spoke at one of the screenings we did up in New Hampshire. I have been a little bit disappointed. I haven't heard as much from Hillary Clinton as I would like to.
Yeah.
Especially being that her husband was in power during the Rwandan genocide, and the fact that he said that it was his greatest regret of his time in office.
Yeah.
And so I would like to definitely see, you know, more from her. I'd like to see her take a strong standpoint and take leadership on this issue. I think that she would be very effective at getting the message across.
In all seriousness, if we had a law enforcement system that was modeled on the one in The Day the Earth Stood Still, the Robert Wise science fiction film. And Michael Rennie they've created a nation of all-powerful robots, and the first aggressor gets iced, gets eliminated right away. All aggressive behavior is immediately taken out. No questions asked. And so the one who strikes the first blood is the one who pays. Is there any misunderstanding of the situation in Darfur? The people who have struck the first blood are the people in Khartoum. Is that not correct?
Well, there had been attacks from tribal groups, the Arab nomads against the people.
Yeah.
The government was protecting them. The government doesn't do equal development. I think that the problem does lie with the government.
Yeah.
If the government would change their ways and respect these people as individuals and would help develop their areas with all of their billions of dollars of oil wealth,
yeah,
start developing the southern part of the country like they do Khartoum, that has super malls and paved roads and street lamps and huge airport and all this other stuff,
yeah,
they developed the south, there wouldn't be these issues.
Right, okay. All right, man. Well, how is your book doing, by the way? Has that been selling with any?
I keep running into people that have read it, and it is a very effective tool. I get emails all the time from people, because it tells the full story of my time there in Darfur,
mm-hmm,
in much more depth. We added a little humor and stuff in there from time to time to lighten it up. So I have actually no indication on how well it's selling as of yet because it's still too early to tell.
Yeah.
Since this just came out at the end of March.
Okay. Has there been, just in perspective, I mean, all countries always go to war. They always bring out the heavy armor and the heavy artillery when economic interests are threatened. The other thing that gets them going is when the country has been directly attacked, as we were in Pearl Harbor in 1941, as we were on 9/11 here. But countries almost never seem to go and do the compassionate, humane, decent thing, which is to stop horrible murder. Compassionate reasons never seem to be the reason that troops go in to any country.
That is very true, and I think it is. There's one example where I think we kind of did, and that was NATO's involvement in the Balkans. where we tried to stop, you know, this genocide from continuing there in the Balkans after the attack of Srebrenica.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. I think it's because our government is responsible for protecting the interests of us. And so if it doesn't have any, if it doesn't affect us in any way, our government isn't going to be, they're not going to want to go do something like that unless we make it an issue for ourselves, unless we get the public involved and the public stands up and says, hey, this is important to us and we want our government to be involved in this, then it becomes interest of our government and then we can actually go do something to stop it.
Well, it was very nice speaking with you. Thank you for taking the time. And I'm, you know, one thing, I was looking over the list on the website of all the cities where the Devil Came on Horseback is opening, and I'm sure I'm just overlooking it, but when is the Los Angeles opening?
We did a Los Angeles opening first at the beginning of June at the Lemley Theater.
I missed it.
On Wilshire. We did a really quiet opening because we wanted to concentrate our resources, as limited as they are, here in New York, because we don't have a theatrical distributor. We have DVD and TV, but we're self-distributing it, you know, ourselves. Obviously, being self-distribution, we're distributing it ourselves through the theaters because we think it's very important for people to see. So we have limited resources, and we wanted to concentrate our efforts here in New York.
And it's being projected off a DVD or off a hard drive, or how high quality is the digital projection?
It's tremendous. I mean, my pictures, you know, are high enough quality that they can be projected with an HD camera. We've done it at digital projectors. We've got, you know, the films made to shoot on, you know, theaters. I mean, it's
right.
It's very, very high quality.
Yeah, I love digital projection the way it's going. It's not in any way a diminishment. It's pretty darn good these days.
Puts you right there.
Yeah. Well, good to hear from you, man. Thank you very much. And I hope it opens again here. I hope it plays again. Because, you know, I'm only just starting to come into the realm myself, and I try and keep up with everything. I just didn't see it when it was here in June.
We're hoping to bring it back here after a bigger release here. We're hoping to get picked up somewhere and take it out to many, many more cities.
Yeah. All right, be well, and thanks very much for your
time.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.